podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Friday show. It's Neil Atkinson with Jake Nolan, with Paddy Fitzsimons and with Harrison Warden to talk about. We'll start off talking about the fact that Liverpool aren't playing, Paddy. It's a disappointment from the point of view of match-going supporters. I can't quite gauge where I think the manager will be. I think he'll be of the view you should never have to play twice in 3 days. But he's been quite sort of, I think, outspoken on the idea that it's the middle game of the Christmas three, the one he doesn't like. And I think also there's playing Leeds United now when they do appear to have had all of their injury problems. It wouldn't have took much COVID to make it difficult for them. All of them are vaccinated. I think we've got to take what everything Leeds are saying in good faith because they're powered through to this point. But I do think ever so slightly from Liverpool's sporting point of view, of the three fixtures, if there was one to be postponed, I think this might have been the third choice.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you've got to look at it in the context of last night. I think the manager might be a little bit more annoyed about it being called off. Had we gone out last night, I think the idea of this being called off, if we'd gone out last night and he'd rested the likes of Salah, Mane, etc., he'd have sort of thought, well, I could have played them and gone through. I think the fact that we've gone through last night means that, you know, players who were rested have an even longer break. It is the 28th, obviously, that he has the issue with.
And not just him, you get the impression.
No, and a lot of managers, I think Potter spoke well about it as well, but I think I get the impression he might be all right with this. You know, I do take your point on, this might be a good time to play Leeds. I think where we're looking on wanting to finish and, you know, the things that we want to win this year, I think we should be looking to beat Leeds at home any time of the season. So I think from the point of view of him and players getting rest, and also just on a human level, you know, the group's very together. I think the idea of him maybe saying to the lads, listen, we can recover. You can spend a little bit of time at home before this game that looks like it's still going to take place on the 28th, and everyone's trying to stay safe so that we can all be as available as possible for that game. I think this might give him the opportunity to do that. But yeah, from a supporter's point of view, you know, we were discussing before how great last night was. Obviously, everyone wants to go Boxing Day now, and it might be the last home game the fans can go to for a while. But I do think from Klopp's point of view, I think he might just take it for what it is, and it's a break, and it's sort of what he's wanted. Remains to be seen what happens on the 28th now, and obviously if that was to get cancelled, that might change how he felt about this one going. But I think for now he'll take it.
They were all going to be overworked anyway, Jake. That's the thing to point out, and they'll have had the plans accordingly. It's the key question is obviously when it's going to be rearranged for, and we don't know that yet from a Liverpool point of view. And I think that's, you know, obviously if it ends up in January when we're in the midst of AFCON, Leeds are stronger, where we'll feel weaker. It'd then be one more game creating disruption in that run, if you know what I mean, when they'll have planned for some degree of a break. I think all of it does add up to, it's not as cut and dried as this is a bit of a result for the Liverpool manager, and I don't think it should be just sort of seen as that. I think it's part of his wider issue around, he just likes to be able to plan. And now he's got another variable that he's going to have to deal with. But all of that said, I'll say it again, you know, Leeds are 100% vaccinated. So I think we've got to take the idea that they themselves, they'd rather have fulfilled the fixture, they haven't been able to.
Yeah, definitely. I think Klopp and Linders will have the Google calendar out now, won't they? Trying to plot where it's going to be and double guess the Premier League. I'm in two camps with it being off, to be honest with you. Part of me really enjoys going the boozer on Boxing Day or going the game. The other part of me thinking, do you know what, with the Henderson article coming out and the noises that Klopp makes, and also being a little bit concerned of society in general myself at the moment, it's probably for the best. Interesting to see what happens on the 28th and beyond that, really. And the other side of it as well is, like, it would have been great to play Leeds because they look absolutely terrible at the moment, don't they? I was away last week and kind of had enough of me missus for an hour, so when I watched it in a pub in the States, them against City, and my God, they were all over the place. Caught a lot of them last season as well and thought they were really good. I was enjoying the journey, documentary, Bielsa, him sitting on mad stuff, all that. but yeah, I don't know what's happened there. It looks like they just legs have fallen off, so they've maybe made the most out of it getting postponed.
It's Wolves Watford's gone as well. Harrison, Everton have asked for Burnley Everton to go, saying that they've got 5 or 6 COVID cases and a lot of injuries in there, and they've been told no, which suggests it's not just the TV games. You know, Burnley Everton's 3 p.m. because it's Christmas and no one needs to be subjected to it. But they find themselves in this one. I think it's back to the idea of you just don't sort of know. Now, as I say, we'll take Leeds of good faith. I'll keep saying it. Injury crisis has been there and they are 100% vaccinated. So, if you know, they're taking it seriously. They've been taking it seriously all the way through. But you know, we're doing this show now, and there's every chance that literally whilst we're recording, or an hour afterwards, or an hour after it comes out, another two or three games are going. It is this you just don't know where you're up to thing with all of this that makes it difficult.
It's up in the air, isn't it? Every single hour, something seems to change, an article comes out and whatnot, and you just feel like you've got to check your phone every 30 minutes or Twitter just to see what comes next. Like I said, like it's been said before, I'm gutted the games off, to be honest with you, and I'm looking from a goal different point of view. The goals that Leeds have conceded, they've conceded, what was it, 7 to City and 4 to Arsenal. I was thinking that was a chance for us to go and put them to the sword. And we had a good little gap on City, didn't we, goal-wise. And I was looking at Leeds to think, yeah, we should get back, get a little margin on them again. It's just sad, isn't it, Boxing Day? I know it's R12, which isn't ideal. It would have been R12. But it's just Boxing Day football, especially after the buzzer last night. Last night was great, and you're looking at momentum-wise. I think even Klopp, the way Klopp was celebrating at full-time, it just felt that, like, we had a bit of momentum was there and that we had something going for us. So it's good to them, but I just think that now we can just absolutely tear Leicester away now after their antics last night.
I think Klopp might recognise, you know, all the talk we've said about good faith, and Klopp might recognise that this could be us at any point, do you know what I mean? So I think on my point about them being quite relaxed about it, I don't mean in the idea of, oh, you know, we'll take a break for the lads while we can, and, you know, rest the legs. I think you might just look at it, Liz. I think certain other, you know, clubs that might have wound them up slightly.
I think the other thing on it as well, Paddy, is from Klopp's point of view, it's the 23rd. It's not like it's happening on the morning of the game. There's loads of time to work your training schedules back out again, work out how you're looking after your players, work out the whole thing to then be able to point at Leicester. It isn't like he's had to get them all geared up for Leicester off the back, so for Leeds off the back of the midweek game, only to watch it fall through on the day of the game.
Well, that's what I was trying to touch on before with, you know, when I said, I mean, did an interview last night where they were talking, they asked him something about, oh, what you do now preparing for a game on Boxing Day. And he said, you know, there's no training days now. It's just you have recovery days, and then we'll have a session on shape and things. You know, your point's great there about, well, at least he doesn't have to go through all of that now where he recovers to go through shape for it to be called off just before. He can now plan different sessions depending on the game on the 28th now. And I think, you know, he's a good fella. He'll recognise, you know, the vaccination rates at Leeds. He'll recognise that this can happen to us at any point, and I think he'll just have to see it for what it is.
Yeah, do you think he knew last night? Because he made three subs at half-time, didn't he? Which is interesting.
I thought that when I heard, but I do wonder if the way the game was going, he might have just thought, I'll have to get the kids off here and get some first teams on. But you never know, to be fair, do you? But
all interesting stuff. So it leaves us, seemingly, Burnley versus Everton will go ahead. I do feel like Everton, the way Benitez has talked about it, I'll read out what Benitez's comments are. After the game against Chelsea, we had 5 positives with the injuries and the positives. We'd expect the game will be postponed like in a lot of games. Now I think if I have 11 players fit and where can I put them, I'm really surprised we're playing this game. He says he's got 9 fit outfield players, 3 goalkeepers, 5 youngsters for the match, and he might be forced to include Calvert-Lewin for 4 months out with injury. After 4 months out with injury, it's a massive risk to the players and not fair, says Benitez. I think that's true. Harrison, you know, I'll take him at face value there. Again, Rafa, let's take Rafa at face value. Yeah. But the other thing that does for Rafa at this point, I think, is Everton are on played 17. They've only had 1 cancelled so far. They're up against Burnley, who are on played 15. And maybe, and I'm just sort of throwing it out there, but maybe the Premier League have looked at that and said, we can't have Burnley not fulfil another fixture here. Because it's when, if ever, did he make them back? And that I do wonder if that might have played a part, because they can't have Burnley just sat there on 15 when, say, for instance, Newcastle could be on 19 by the end of the run. You know, it just would not be fair on Burnley.
That's a good point, Neil. It's not a point that I thought about. And we're talking about Liverpool, how do we fit in this Leeds game, or when's it going to come in? If Burnley were on 15, that would be trouble, wouldn't it? And it's that mindset, you know, like, let's say Burnley, for instance, were 4 points behind Newcastle at whatever point it was come March, and they've got 4 games now still to play. It's that mindset of Burnley fans couldn't bank on them games, whatever games they have to win, the games in hand to, like, catch up. It's that, like, you can never guarantee games in hand to win, and so would that cause just, like, disturbance for them? It's like, I think it put them in such a, like, difficult position, because Newcastle, look at Newcastle, for example, they've got all that money. I mean, they'll be looking to stay in the league. Burnley are going to have to graft to stay in the league, because we don't know what January's going to come as well. Burnley know that the team that they're up against to stay in this league are going to splash cash in January. And that game, you know, you feel it's going to be a good game. I know it's not for the eye, do you know what I mean? Not looking at Burnley Everton. But yeah. I think it'll actually be a good game, because I think both teams do need a result. And stylistically, they're not going to go and, like, play for a win, but I think they've both got to get a win.
I couldn't agree more. If you look at the way the table sits at the minute, Jake, there, you know, you've got Everton sat on, played 17, 19 points, sat in 14th place. Burnley, 18th, played 15, 11 points. you know, if they win the game, Burnley, they've played two games fewer than Everton, and they'd be at that point 5 points behind them. It's one where if you are Burnley, you've only won once all season. You do need to start picking these wins up. But to be fair, they've been really consistent recently. They've been hard to beat. What's actually disrupted them is stopping playing games as much as anything else.
Yeah, big lads derby, innit?
It is. Big lads
derby. Yeah, a bit like this room. Yeah. Yeah, I think Dice will be fuming for the reasons that you mentioned about Benitez. Kind of take Benitez's word on that, even if maybe one or two might be exaggerated. Although they did go away to Chelsea, couldn't you? So it was probably going to be similar type of setup, I imagine. Yeah, I'm with you on the 100% with you on the fixtures thing. By the way, I've kind of started trying to read these in advance because I think that there's definitely people, boffins in the Premier League office doing a bit of risk management at the minute, thinking, when are we going to do this? When are we going to do that? And also, is that game televised?
Yeah.
Does it make a difference to the table?
Will people want it to be televised? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think all of that is going on at the moment, and there's probably a lot of stressed out people there.
I think there probably is a lot of stressed out people there, but there's going to be a lot of stressed out Blues, Paddy, not least the ones who are going to Burnley. I mean, at least they've got a game to go to on Boxing Day. But it's one where it'll be difficult for them to get a result. It'll be difficult for them to engage in the second favourite Evertonian pursuit, which is recrimination post-game if they haven't got a result. Internal recrimination. There will be some external recrimination towards the Premier League if they don't get a result, and that's fine. We're all within our rights to do that. But it's this idea, I think, that they would like there to be a clean Benitez yes or Benitez no thing. Benitez yes because he starts to pick up results. Benitez no because he doesn't start to pick up results and therefore he's got to go. Stuff like this actually makes that harder, I think, for the Blues. It brings up further open to me the prospect of them sleepwalking into a little bit of difficulty.
Yeah, am I right in thinking Benitez won't be there? Is he? Didn't he test positive?
So he might not be there either now.
Yeah, so I feel
big like Christmas dinner.
Yeah, I feel like that feels a bit harsh that you know, they've had the Premier League reject, you know, the request to be postponed when the manager can't be there and everything else going on. But I think your point there about a Benitez yes or a Benitez no thing, I think I could just see it dragging off for a long time. It appears Mascheri's right behind them. If they go there and get beaten and Benitez isn't there to take charge, it's another one of them where who do they blame, and then Benitez can sort of wash his hands of it and blame it on the player thing.
On the Premier League, yeah.
You know, results in this league won't wait for anyone. They're not going to wait for you to sort things out. And as we've seen with the whole management of this situation since the start of the month, the policy seems to be we'll go ahead when we can and we'll play when we can. And if they have to play on Boxing Day and Burnley and don't get a result, well, you're not getting them points back. You know, they're not sorting it for any other time. And I struggle to see with them when I struggle to see them getting a new manager and changing it, because I just don't think they will. I think he'll just about do enough, and I feel like the teams around them will do enough for it to not appear terrible. I can't see them getting dragged into the bottom three for a prolonged period of time. But as we said, you know, when games will be played, there's a possibility March, April time, there's teams around them, with games in hand, the likes of Burnley, and if they've just got a bit more fight and a bit more going for them, then they could be in serious trouble. And, you know, when are they picking up points? I struggle to see it. I think if this goes ahead, I can see it being a big win for Burnley, because, you know, if they won one all season, Burnley, or one or two all season, they need points themselves. And I think, you know, with a full crowd at Turf Moor and a little bit more to fight for, I can only see it going one way.
Does this mean Big Dunk do the line?
Yeah.
It could mean Big Dunk's doing it.
Brilliant. You know, yeah. If they go there and win 4-0, Big Dunk's getting the job, innit?
Oh, that's incredible stuff. I hadn't even thought that there was that variable on the big man.
Roll out the sweatband.
Yeah. How many Burnley ball boys can he hug?
Do you know what, on a serious point, I hadn't thought that if they go there and win with Ferguson, that's a whole different element to the madness that's already going on.
I'm right
there.
Behind that. I'm going to Burnley.
Next one, because there's a lot of 3 PMs, Harrison. It's City, Man City versus Leicester. It's very rare Man City come into a game where they haven't had a midweek game and their opponents have. And because of that, you know, when Leicester ended up with a couple of injuries against us, you know, which was a real shame, because, you know, they're all going to have to use private medicine. But they find themselves, I think, suddenly just looking so ropey, it's ridiculous. You know, they must be completely bereft of confidence, because they shouldn't lose that game last night. And Rodgers is doing his best afterwards. And by doing his best, I mean just telling loads of fucking lies. Yeah. But he's doing his best afterwards to act as though, oh, well, you know what you'd expect, Anfield. They'll have walked in their favourites, not ours, etc., etc. I think they could be cruising for an absolute bruising at the Etihad.
I thought it was embarrassing that interview saying things like that. I just think that's a Leicester Rodgers type of thing to do, to fold under pressure. We've mentioned in the past, haven't we, had the bottle top four two times in a row. Do you know what I mean? And I had a feeling that we'd pull it back at half time. But then you feel sorry for them in the way that City, like you said, have had a week off. And they've had the midweek off. And then by the time they played Liverpool on the Tuesday, we'd have had 6 days off. And so it's what he can't put two 11s out on Sunday at City and Tuesday against Liverpool. So he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't type of mentality, do you know what I mean? And I can't see them picking up any points in them two games. And he's looking at it, and that 6 days that he's had getting knocked out the cup, if he does lose to City, does lose to us on the Tuesday, he's going to be under so much pressure, not just lose. I think they can get beaten, like you said. But the only thing that I'd say that he can rely on is the pace that they've gone behind with Vardy and Daka. I think they caused us issues in the first half. I think when we had Gomez and Konate, who could match them for pace, I think we dealt with them fine. But City aren't lightning quick at the back, them two centre halves, and I think that's where they can cause City issues. But I still can't see them getting anything.
I can't see them getting anything. It was weird last night. Even the subs, you know, he doesn't do Vardy because of some sort of hamstring thing, but he gives him the 90, which is a bit weird.
Yeah,
he's got Luckman on the bench, but he still doesn't do him. He does Bertrand and Vestergaard, all Brighton, and Iheanacho. Now, they're all footballers who played part in successful sides at some point across the last couple of years. They've all shown themselves to be reasonably good at football. And yet, it felt like everything made them weaker, and they just crumbled in the end. I think that, and if you're crumbling at Anfield against what is, to start with, almost a Liverpool C team, becomes a Liverpool B team with hints of Liverpool A around it, Paddy. I just don't see how you go the Etihad when they've had more rest than you and feel as though you're getting a kick.
I think that they're a funny side and in a really weird place at the moment. I can't decide if last night's down to the manager, if he says to them 3-1 up at half time, listen, we see this out, we sit back, we invite pressure, we back ourselves to see it out, or it's the players. Because they sort of, and all season, they've reminded me a little bit, and Harrison mentioned there about the two top four things falling apart on the last day. They remind me a little bit of a Moyes Everton, where they're not quite sure whether they believe their own hype or don't. You'd see Moyes Everton sides finish fifth, sixth, and going good runs every season, and then when it came to it, going to big ground, they just bottle it or fall apart. And I wonder slightly, look at some of them players on the pitch, because they've got great players. I wonder slightly if it's a little bit too easy for them at Leicester. You know, I'm not saying that.
I think's really interesting, just come back to you on that, is that they've won big games away from home under Rodgers. But all the stuff that they've done to win those games away from home now looks like it's another planet from them. That's the really strange thing. Yeah, and the FA Cup as well against Chelsea. Like, I think they are. I think they're currently, and they've been all season, I think they are the strangest team in the league. Everyone else you've sort of by now, I think, got a bit of a handle on. I've got no sense about these lads at all.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, you can say a lot of things about their end last night, but at the end of the game, having been beaten on penalties 3-1 up at half time, cruising, didn't seem to me like there was a lot of stick going their way. And I think if that's a Liverpool end and you throw away like that, I think, you know, you get behind your players and things, but I think words are said, do you know what I mean? And from what I've seen on social media, what Rodgers says now, he spins it, seems to be sort of took it at face value and gone, oh yeah, it was harsh, you know, Anfield can be a tough place. And I just wonder if it can be a bit easier at Leicester. You know, they're not a big club, are they? You know, they've done well in recent years, but they're not a big football club. I wonder if a Chelsea wouldn't stand for that, and Man United wouldn't stand for that. And I think there's players there in good money and really talented footballers who do well year in, year out. But when it actually comes to it, and when you're struggling like they are this season, you know, they haven't quite had it in them. You know, going out to Europe, that's a big deal for them. All last season, I know they didn't quite qualify for the Champions League, but being in the UEFA Cup, Europa League, that's a big thing for the football club. And, you know, they've gone out in the group stage there, and that's a massive underachievement, I think, when you look at the squad and the players they've got. And I just don't think that they're held to account enough. And I think going to City, maybe off the back of Anfield, maybe questions will start to be asked if they go there and get beat well, which I think they could. But yeah, I think it's a strange side, a strange season, because they could quite feasibly still finish fourth. But I think they've got to get their act together soon. And on the evidence last night, I can't see it.
Yeah, the Rodgers thing intrigues me massively, to be honest with you. I kind of keep my eye out just because he used to be Liverpool manager and he used to rate him. But can't help but look at it at the moment and think, do you know what, he could do a really good staff there. Because you look at it, and I know we lost the staff at Liverpool. You look at sort of Klopp at the moment. There's a lot of kind of Linders talk. You know, we've had another goalkeeper coach come in. It's about the we and not the me. And it's the opposite with Rodgers, isn't it? Yeah. It's all about him. he wants another big job. I think that's clear. He's trying to pave his way there through the Europa League, through playing a certain type of footy.
But he's not doing himself any favours at the minute, is he?
I completely agree, and that's why it completely intrigues me. And I think that's ultimately why he felt a favour with Liverpool, wasn't it, in the end? You know, he kind of big sort of personality in the dressing room weren't there. Again, it became all about him, and he kind of ran out of ideas. And I kind of feel like we're starting to see that again with Leicester.
The one thing I think for him, Harrison, the thing he's got in his defence is there's every chance going to City he's going to play a back three of Castagne and Ndidi and Bertrand, because I can't quite work out who else he gets on the pitch. He's lost Evans, he's lost Fofana, and I do think that was a massive blow before ball was kicked this season, because they were planning to build so much of it around him. Vestergaard's not worked yet. Maybe it will, but you'd be surprised if that just sort of turns overnight. Then within there, he loses. I think Soyuncu goes off with an injury against us, and it didn't look like a proper pull, to be honest with you. You know, he's going to end up with none of his first choice three centre halves, and he would say, if he was sat here, he hasn't really had any of his first three choice centre halves all season. And I think Soyuncu has gone off the boil for him big time. I think Soyuncu looks a better player when he plays next to Johnny Evans.
Yeah, well, Johnny Evans is a very, very underrated player, isn't he? Every time he plays for Leicester, he stands out. But then there's that argument, Neil, where his signings haven't been good enough in a way. I think Daka's been all right, but Daka scored four and then on the Thursday, then on the Sunday he was on the bench.
Yeah.
And I just think things like that's just a bit weird. I think Bertrand, he's been very poor. Vestergaard, he was absolutely horrendous last night, and he's been a poor sign. And I think he's brought in them players who've got Premier League experience.
I didn't like Sumari either last night. I didn't like him last night either. I didn't think he was good last night. I thought he was really ill-disciplined, didn't keep his shape at any point.
Well, some of his signings for us were poor as well, and so he might have a history of just bad signings. And I think Daka, he's been all right. He's not set the world alight, but I think he's been all right. But that's the best I've got so far in this last couple of signings that they've made. And I think things like that don't help himself. If Leicester fans could see that his signings are doing well, they're showing bits promising, I think they'd give him a bit less. Well, we said not give them enough stick, but I think if, let's say, Liverpool hat on, we'd give him less stick. We could see if we could see something promising, but there's nothing. Do you know what I mean? And I look at the players we're saying about, like, he has a bit easy. I look at James Maddison, last night, very talented player. First half, arguably ran the game, some of the pocket he was getting it. Second half, and it's back into the wall, nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a Leicester thing, and I don't know, because they have got potential to hurt teams. Then, you know, we look at Pereira coming off, and Marty, he is nowhere near good enough. I think, yeah, you know what, Neil, you told me into them getting an absolute slapping. I'm just looking at how they're getting a slapping.
Yeah, it just feels like history repeating itself to me. You know, it does, you know, with the Liverpool job. You know, with the signings, maybe hit and miss, letting them down. You know, he reverts the sort of three at the back when times aren't good. He done that with us. And ultimately, it just feels like it's all playing out all over again. And you know, repeat my point, really, it just feels like he could do with some people around him to help him out, really. And yeah, you know, probably the only time all season that I want City to just get completely carried away with themselves on Boxing Day and have a lovely time smashing them.
Move forward, Norwich face Arsenal. It's Arsenal, again, play midweek, Paddy. Arsenal, they're not being used to that over the course of the season. But they looked in a tidy enough place, I think, Arsenal at the minute. They're not setting the world alight. They're not doing anything unlikely. What they're doing is they're just winning the games they should win and scrapping reasonably well in most of the games, a couple of exceptions, but in most of the games where they shouldn't. And while they keep doing that, they can keep pushing for that fourth spot.
Yeah, I think I've been quite impressed with them the last few weeks. I mentioned on a Friday show a few weeks back about, I think, the best thing he's done recently, Arteta, it's just lowered the volume down on all the noise around the club. You know, for a while they were always the big crisis club every single week, barring, you know, a poor performance at Everton and a defeat there. And I think there was one or two around that game as well where you look like they might be sliding, you know, back into being that crisis club and struggling again. You know, he's threw together two or three wins on the bounce. I think he's shown as a manager he's very good with working with young players, and whether that's going to make him an elite manager or get far in big jobs like Arsenal, you don't know. It remains to be seen. But I think bringing someone like a Martinelli back in, who looked a really good player, you know, pre-COVID, and I think he had an injury as well and things, has just freshened it up. And you know, these players, whether it be because they're grateful for him for the opportunities or they're the first manager they've really worked with, you know, they seem to buy into what he wants from them, and they're getting results. And, you know, there is that mini league that we've discussed on the show before, but, you know, below the top three, of all teams getting for top four. And they look most likely at the moment because they're playing the best football and they're winning games, and others are struggling too. So it wouldn't surprise me at all, but you do fear with Arsenal that they're only, you know, one bad performance and a bad defeat away from it all going wrong again. But right now it looks good. But, you know, you just don't know with them, do you? But I think for now, I think they're doing really well and the players performing for them.
It's in lots of ways, I think this is your Arsenal test. to be honest with you, Jake, is that they've just got to keep doing this. You know, they got the tidy win against Southampton. They slipped up against Everton, but they got the tidy win against Southampton. Tidy win against West Ham, which felt valuable at the time. Then they didn't allow any mistakes to creep in against Leeds. They put Sunderland to the sword midweek, albeit just in the Carabao Cup, and Sunderland's a League One side. But the next two, you know, if they take maximum points from them, you begin to think they might take a bit more catching for top four than I thought earlier in the season. They've got Norwich away and Wolves at home, and it's a nice little double that to lay a bit of a marker down and say to everyone else, you're gonna have to go with better than 2 points a game to catch us.
Yeah, I've been quietly impressed with them, even at Anfield. What was that, a month back now? I thought they were great, first half an hour, 40 minutes, until they started kicking off. But yeah, I think they've been really good, and I think I agree with Paddy, I think he's quietly doing a really, really good job there. I really enjoy watching Smith Rowe and Saka. I'm behind it. I'm almost celebrating for them on the sly, and then like slapping myself for doing it. You know what I mean? But they don't really feel like our business, which helps with that slightly. Yeah. It's top four form, isn't it? But it's just, I would say. But I think the Aubameyang thing might have helped them a lot. By the way, in terms of the rebuild is on now, and they start. They look a lot more stronger. They look like they got a lot more energy. The press up top.
It's clarified his decision making as well. I think it lets him get Odegaard on the pitch every game, yeah, with Smith Rowe, with Saka, with you know, whatever, Martinelli. Suddenly, yeah, it's easier to pick three out of those four rather than only two out of those four, because you feel as though you've got to pick Lacazette to, yeah, do Aubameyang's running for a man. Aubameyang.
When you're winning games as well, I think it's easier to sell to the players and the supporters as well, isn't it? And I think it feels a lot like to me, like maybe the supporters and the players have just had enough of Aubameyang as well now. So, you know, it's easy to turn around to them now and say, listen, he's had his chances. This has happened before. This is nothing new. We can move on from here. And I think you're spot on about the rebuild. You know, it is team now. You get the sense someone like Aubameyang was never really his player. You know, he got a real tune out of him on the left when he first came in, when they win the FA Cup and he gets his big contract. But I think he's always going to clash with a senior player like that who's clearly trouble. And he's on big money and doesn't seem too bothered.
I think Shaq coming back from injury is a big boost for them as well. I think Shaq will always be Shaq anyway, and the fact that he's got a moment of madness. But
oh, I love him. Absolutely.
They're a young squad, but he's a senior one in there, and I think they really needed that. I think Anfield, if he plays, I think, like you said, first 35 minutes they were good, but I think they needed somebody before it all got wild and all that. They needed somebody who's been there and done that to calm them down a bit. And Lacazette, another one, I think they've got a good balance. I think the signings, Tomiyasu's done a very good job,
yeah,
at right back. I've been impressed with him. I think Tavares will take a bit more settling down, but again, he's not a bad player. I think he's maybe more of a left wing back than a left back in my eyes, but again, not a bad player. Martinelli coming back from injury and firing, they've got options. They're finding Odegaard a lot more on the ball, and I like what Arteta's doing. Like you said, the first 35 minutes, 40, you could see what they were building at Anfield. I always thought that, you know, the inexperience, we've been there. I always thought that we'd put quite a few goals past them, but you could see that they were building something, and they were brave, and they were taking the ball under pressure, and that's not easy to do at Anfield. They were a bit like a European side the first 35 minutes at Anfield, and that's a good credit to them.
I know it was a good while back as well, but do you remember the Charity Shield about 18 months ago? That is as brave as a performance against Liverpool side on a big pitch like Wembley that I can remember, to be honest with you.
That goal playing from the goal kick, didn't
you? Yeah, they did. And I remember them thinking, oh, these could be decent, this. And it's all kind of been a bit hit and miss ever since, hasn't it? But it seems like he's getting a tune out of them again.
Norwich, obviously, expected to be a former Whipping Boys there. They'll make it hard for Arsenal, but they are at the bottom of the table for a reason. Spurs, Palace intrigues me, Paddy. Tottenham get a good win against West Ham, but there's a lot of West Ham having the ball second half, chasing the game, which suits Tottenham and doesn't suit West Ham, if we're all honest about it. That's what West Ham have found the toughest. They've dealt with it at times well this season, but it's what they've found the toughest. They didn't pick Antonio either, West Ham as well, which I don't think helps them in that sort of game. I feel like Tottenham are going to be, I think when it looks like it's working, I think they're going to look great and people are going to be really impressed by them. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's a few games where they almost look like they can't find a teammate for long patches. This one against Palace, the one thing I would say is it might suit them, because Vieira's Palace will just come to play. You struggle to see them doing anything else.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at our game against them, you could see it being a little bit like that, where, I mean, because of issues with us with injuries and COVID, it was sort of a very open game, and Tottenham looked really well against us in spells, and you can see Palace going there, and, you know, not to do them a disservice, but they seem to only really know one way under Vieira, and it's to go and have a go and match a team as best they can, and I think that might suit Tottenham. I wonder if he now commits to just Kane and Son as a two. you know, against us, he tried the Dele Alli thing, and I think although he looked all right at spells, and you know, he had a couple of chances, I wonder if, you know, they're a duo in the Mourinho side that sat back and were happy to let opposition have the ball, got about 20 goals and 20 assists between them. So I wonder if he banks on them too.
He almost play, if he's going to play Ali, he plays him as more of a centre mid.
Yeah, and just, says, this is where you're going to get in this team, because they're that good. I'm not trying to, I'm not going to build around you. You know, they're our way home, them too. I thought I was impressed with them against us. You know, I understand it's the R4 Sunday thing and the fans were up for it, and like I said, we made it a bit of a game that suits them, you know, a bit of a basketball game. But I think a game against Crystal Palace is an opportunity for them to get 3 points in front of your home crowd and impress. And I think, you know, Kane's broke that duck now, hasn't he, getting the goal against us. I think they'll be wanting to kick on from here.
They will. What I would say, Jake, is Palace are more than capable of giving them a game. Gallagher looks the absolute part. He's one of the first footballers I've seen in a while who really does feel very Roy of the Rovers. You know, everything about him's so all action. He's the bouncing blonde hair and all of that. He catches the eye. But when I last saw them, I thought Will Hughes was excellent. First game back after a long layoff, and I thought he really helped Gallagher. He was first to everything, won his battles. He's that sort of player. Coate as well has got that. So then the attacking players have got a bit of a platform. I like watching Palace, and that comes as a massive shock to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a while, hasn't it, with the Hodgson years, the Wilderness years, as it would be, sort of, yeah, reincarnated, haven't he? But I agree. And I used to love Paddy Vieira as a player as well. He was kind of my generation coming up, so in a slimmer sense. And I think even if worst comes to worst and they end up going down, I still think he'll have fans. He'll still have somebody to take him. For example, if the Brighton job came up or something like that, I imagine he'd be in the half for that.
But I only lost 5 out of 17. I think this is it's a really weird one, because I feel a bit like it's easy for me to say it'll suit Tottenham because they'll get to play on the break and et cetera, et cetera. That's sort of true, but Palace have almost played everyone once now, if you know what I mean. Yeah. They've only lost 5. Now, they've only won 4, and that's the problem. But they've been actually hard to beat in a really weird way.
Did well at Anfield, didn't he?
Yeah, did well at Anfield, even though it finishes 3-0. It's 8 draws in the 17 games. So if they were dead open at the back, you'd go, well, how was it 8 draws? Yeah, have they only lost 5? And that's why I think it could be a bit tougher for Tottenham than maybe we'd be anticipating.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they're an Edouard away from kicking on and getting sort of 6 goals in 10 games, or, you know, Benteke getting it from really moving up the table very quickly and looking like a very, very good side. On the other side of that, though, I know it was kind of done Tottenham, but the worth mentioning that the thing that really, really worried me, and I don't think it got too much press against Tottenham, was just how quickly they look like a Conte side. That's come out of nowhere. I know they had the break and he's had a lot of time on the training pitch, but I think they looked more quickly like a Conte side, Tottenham, than they took at Chelsea, for example. And I'm terrified of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, to be fair, when I watch the game, they ran a lot. They were there, like battling and all. And it was impressive, to be fair, and how quick they got from A to B in behind. And it was impressive. But then I look at Palace and I think, if they have Tompkins, they're weak at the back, aren't they, Palace? I think Tompkins coming in, he was out for a while, wasn't he? And then he's come back. I think if Son can play on him, that's going to be true.
Do you reckon it might be Anderson back for this one?
That'll be a bonus for Palace, that, to be fair. But then Gallagher, like you said, Neil, I'd love watching him play. And do you know why he's prepared to do the dirty work as well?
Yeah.
He is, and you wouldn't imagine that with him. Do you know, like a lad coming through Chelsea's academy, you wouldn't imagine that he's prepared. But he's like, every time I watch him, I'm trying to see where he's weaker. But he's like a 7 out of 10 minimum in every department.
Yeah.
And he's very good. I think, like you said, if Edward, I don't think they found the balance just yet between Benteke and Edward, yeah, Palace. I think they change between every game. It's like Benteke starts 1 week, then Edward the other. I think Ayew and Zaha are said. I think they appreciate Ayew for what he does off the ball. I think he's good on the ball. I think he's very good with his back to goal and in the air.
Dear kite.
Yeah, he's literally very similar. Yeah.
Go without the goal return.
Yeah, he scored his first goal, didn't he? Like,
not on the pens.
Something ridiculous. But I think they've got good balance. I think, yeah, if they can get a striker scoring between Benteke or Edouard, I think they really could push up that table. I think Zaha's going to be Zaha, isn't he? He's always going to get the ball and commit the man. But the balance, I think they appreciate that what Ayew does off the ball suits the system.
Hey, what Palace have got, I think, as well, with the fact that there's a lot of worse teams, is they've got a bit of, you know, wiggle room to, I know we mentioned before about how they will go there and match Tottenham and play. I think the supporters have massively bought into this season. It's refreshing for them as much as anyone after all the years of Hodgson. So I think, you know, there's less pressure on them not to get results, because obviously they need to win games and get points at some point. But if you feel like they won't go down, they've already laid a base there to build on and be fine. Everyone below them doesn't look much better. So you sort of think, you know, if they go there and play well, the supporters will understand if it's not quite the result they want, you know what I mean? And I think they've sort of got the beauty of that this season, and I think Vieira's sort of you know, building on that in terms of not every game has to be this, you know, what it felt like under Hodgson, where this is our point this week, next week will be the defeat because we're playing a Liverpool or a Chelsea, this is our must win. You sort of feel like they've got the freedom to sort of, you pick your results and then, you know, it might come together one game like it nearly did at the Emirates, for example,
yeah,
where you get a big win, but you know, it's not all the pressure on
or,
this
or what it did at City.
Yeah, exactly. It's not all pressure on one game for this one to be the win in a streak of three games or whatever. So, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if they go there and beat them. But also, I think, I'm looking at Tottenham's fixtures here. They've got a nice little run, and you know, we were talking there before about Arsenal stringing two, three wins together and see where that does for you. I think Tottenham are looking at that now with a few games in hand to really, if they want to, because it wouldn't be bad now if they go on a run and push for top four. It's that open. They'd be looking at the next few games now and building on this, a nice home three points, then kick on from there.
West Ham Southampton is another 3 o'clock, but broadly speaking, I can't be bothered. The other ones, West Ham, you know exactly what you're going to get from both of those sides at this point. There'll be no surprises there. West Ham, one that they should win, and obviously had an eye on it, resting Mikel Antonio, which suggests where their priority was, three more league points rather than a semi-final.
He's not scored for ages, though, you know.
No, I know, but not,
yeah.
But he creates so much space because he takes so much looking after as a footballer. But yeah, in general, Southampton have become the least fun team in the league, which I didn't see coming. But I mean, maybe I'll be surprised when West Ham will whack them 9-0. But they used to be a load of laughs, Southampton, and now you just think, oh God, Southampton are playing again, are they? Excellent stuff. I'll close the curtains. We've got Aston Villa versus Chelsea is the 5:30, and here chatting to John Gibbons is Chris Barber.
And to Chelsea and Christmas Barber. There he is. Chris, Chelsea, big game against Aston Villa. Steve Gerrard, old nemesis. I'm sure you'll sing the song, but are you going to win?
I don't know. I mean, don't forget, we clapped him off at his last game at Stamford Bridge. That means we're sound now. are we going to win? I don't know. I think there's such a mixture at the minute of sort of circumstance and self-built chaos in Chelsea at the minute that we're just looking in danger of undoing any good work and any sort of achievements we've done in this point in the season to be in the conversation. And I think the circumstance has been applied latterly. And as with a lot of football, like we accept the narratives that we sort of get given. But, you know, I was looking before, like, I think in the last six games, we let in 11 goals. And in the 10 games before then, we let in three. So it's not just been an Omicron fault, you know. I mean, the Everton game, I'm not a big XG person. I think it was 3.5, and we're just not, for whatever reason, it's not there. I know we've had to change personnel, which obviously is slightly circumstantial, but you thought, Tuchel said this week that although we've got a good squad, it's not that big. And I would say, I'd go the other way around, we've got a big squad that's not that good, more than anything. And the sort of persistence of it, a bit like there's an odd thing that managers do where everything can change bar the formation, and they do it quite a lot. And I think I understand why, because you read about how training grounds are nowadays and how it's processes and positionings, and someone's where they're meant to be, so you're where you're meant to be. But we haven't got someone to play in that middle of that front three. And Christian Pulisic, bless him, it's not him. It's not been Saul. I mean, Sarri tried it with Loftus-Cheek, which, I mean, he's been injured. I wouldn't like to see it. But if you're going to do it, it's got to be someone like Barkley, at least someone who's a bit more instinctive with their sort of football brain and a bit... Pulisic likes to nap people. He's not used to providing that opportunity for other players and holding it up and turning. And his best moment against Wolves was when he wasn't playing in that position. And it's quite frustrating. Watching the Wolves game was quite frustrating. Watching the Everton game was the same. At least Everton, we made more chances and stuff, but I don't know if we're going to win, because I feel like Villa are that team that, what are they scared of? Like, what are they asked about? And they're going to be able to look at the last six games of Chelsea and think, well, we could probably, you know, not put another 11 past them, but we could definitely score a few. And there's an outside chance they're not going to score at all.
Yeah. Someone who is a presence essentially is Lukaku. Is he close? Is he near? Because it's funny, because he was scoring towards the start of the season and people were saying that he was affecting the way you played, and then now the chances aren't going in and suddenly he looks not about number 9 overall.
Well, yeah. I think he's back. He's out of isolation. Him and Hudson-Odoi are now negative, and I think the lockdown isolation rule changes affected them in a good way. So they're available. Whether they'll start, I don't know. But again, it's that thing where Lukaku is in danger of being a solution looking for a problem, and that we're not playing to his strengths at the moment either. He needs to be. I was on with Tez a while ago, and he was making the point. He needs to be in a two, and him and Werner could work. Him and Havertz could definitely work, but to do that, the formation needs to be a different formation, or you kind of, you know, he's a massive investment. I don't think we're going to spin on him as quick as we have with other massive investments. So maybe you do want to change him to play in that formation, because we do have a bit of a penchant for signing those tricky wingers, and we do obviously like our wing backs to play like Liverpool's wing backs and all the rest of it. So maybe it's about, you know, a sort of glassier pace, changing how Lukaku plays his football. But it didn't work at United playing on his own. I'd like to think it can and it will. He seems to be in a much better place. He's so fit and he's so good and he's so clever with how he plays his football. I just think it's almost like we've got too much choice. You know, we're looking at the box of celebrations and we just don't know what to pick out, because we in someone like Mace, you know, we've got the wingers you can provide and we've got the wingers you can score, and we kind of need to decide which one we're going to go for. And then you can sort of go from there. But I am quite nervous about our next few weeks. Namely because, I mean, I don't think this will happen, because I think there's not the same sort of like the sort of trouble. But, you know, Lampard was top in December and was gone 6 weeks later, a year ago. And they're not afraid to do that. And I just think, to a point, Lampard maybe went because of the investment that had come before him in that season. And it was looking odd. But you could argue that at the moment, Chelsea are looking just as odd and just as out of ideas and just as badly drilled and sort of desperate as we were last year. Which would just be fucking annoying.
It's funny, at the top of that, when you said you've been on with Tez, I thought you said Ted, and I thought, why is he talking to my 2-year-old about Chelsea's formations? Like, he's not going to get much.
He's got his own podcast.
I can't imagine it's that good, to be honest with you. You told me
he's a good dribbler. You told me that.
No, he is. Yeah, he's not bad. He's both feet. He is both feet.
Can he play number 9 for Chelsea?
I'll be honest, mate. He's gone off footy a little bit, but I mean, maybe we've just been out. We haven't been outside as much. But he's.
Fair, he sounds like me. I've gone off it a little bit myself. I have been chatting to Ted.
just do what he's done and get banging to Teletubbies, mate. Hey, hey, Ducky, and all that. Best way to be. All but celebrations. is it a little bit of, I don't know, having to sort of check where you are in terms of, because he's still quite new, the manager, isn't he? We feel like we've had him a long time. Is it less than a year? I think it must be less than a year.
Yeah. It was January last year he came in.
Yeah, so it's less than 12 months still. And obviously, you know, winning the Champions League, you know, we had that with Rafa in his first season. He wins that and suddenly you're like, oh, we're going to win the league next year. Do you know what I mean? And then you get a bit of a reality check. Is, I don't know, do Chelsea supporters, does everyone, I guess, sees the temper and say, well, of course, he's not quite going to be able to be at the level of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool or Pep Guardiola's City because they've built those squads themselves.
100%. And I think it's quite easy at the moment to kid yourself into the situation where you can't drop a point over a season and you can't have a performance and you can't have a patch where it looks a bit like we are at the moment. Because I think we're 4, like 5 points off City at the moment. I think it's 4. Which obviously is a two-match swing rather than a one-match swing. But it's the thing, if we are still so much part of the conversation, you do have to not shit the bed a bit and sort of start thinking about how bad you are, because the form at the moment and in lots of other seasons would still be worthy of finishing top. You know, it's how you come out of these patches and it's how you sort of like how you go again. And there isn't any discontent. There doesn't seem to be any noise about it. I do think they realise that they've ended up with a very good manager. And I think he's realised, if you look at his other jobs, he's realised that he's obviously changed. He's not been quite as prickly as he would have been at this stage when he was at PSG and things like that. And we're in a process and we've got a good squad. We've got a good manager. We've still got the owner, who is flawed in other ways, but he's always been kind of football first. There's not much nonsense that happens around Chelsea that's not signings and transfers and all the rest of it. So I think Tuchel's the right place to build. He seems to be looking after a lot of people too. There's the player chirpiness is high, even the players that aren't getting picked. And the way he spoke about the academy boys he played last night was really nice, actually. It was nice sort of hear a Chelsea manager kind of, he's just very realistic with how he speaks. There's not much bells and whistles on it, which which sometimes can jar a little bit because you're a bit awkward and British and you sort of think that you're not meant to be like that. But he just he gets it. He's not deluded. I think he's as frustrated as we are, which is quite a nice thing to feel, I think, to a little point. And we will get better. And I think the thing at the minute I'm is the games in hand of other teams and sort of especially people like Spurs. You don't want to start looking backwards because we did that last season. You know, last season we became all about top four and we basically did it because Spurs beat Leicester on the last day. That was it. We wouldn't have been in there. Obviously, we won it in the end, but the easier route wasn't achieved. And you sort of begin to worry if league form. You don't want to start turning around, basically. You want to be looking up to yourselves and City and be in that conversation. And if we can get a win against you in January, then we're, you know, like I said, that's the thing to go back to the beginning. The football narrative changes so quickly because you consume so much of it. If we do beat you and go to second and City, say, drop points, I think they played Arsenal that day, then you go, oh, fucking hell, actually, we're a point off them again, sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, I think Villa are the worst team to play at the moment, though, for where we're at. Just because I think they look so well drilled and they're so busy, and they read the room at Anfield well. I thought they sort of pissed off the right number of fans. They kind of were in the right players' faces, and obviously it didn't happen for them. But the performance that they're going, you know, from one to the other is massive. They played the top three recently, and they've not let themselves down in any of those games really. And Chelsea are probably the lowest hanging fruit, or literally of those three, so they could be fancying themselves to properly fly at us. And we're always shit around Christmas. They always manage to do it to me every year. They ruin my Christmas.
Well, I hope you have a lovely Christmas, Chris. And as you say, worrying about Tottenham is no way to live your life.
That's for Tottenham fans to do. That's their job.
And they're very good at it.
Definitely.
I'll have a lovely Christmas, mate. Hopefully you're back up for that Chelsea game. Hey,
I'm back in the city. Yeah, don't you worry. I'll be top of the bus. Don't you worry.
Cheers, mate. Have a lovely Christmas.
Take care. Have a good Christmas.
Excellent stuff as ever from Chris, and let's hope he has a lovely Christmas. Bit of pressure on him around New Year as Chelsea come back into the Liverpool picture in a big way. It's all of a sudden, Jake, it just looks like it's hard for Chelsea, and I think that they've got legitimate issues, concerns, injuries combined with some COVID bits and pieces. I think they've got lads coming back from injury, they're having to rush back. I think that in general that's always a problem they've got around N'Golo Kante. I think Tuchel's not the first manager to have that problem. I think where the strange thing with Kante is that if you've got him you want to play him, but if you play him you feel as though you're always playing him one game closer to injury, no matter what you try and do with it. That's what appears to happen. So Tuchel's got to try and solve that issue. I just feel like this is now a horror game for Chelsea away at Villa on a Saturday night on Boxing Day. Steven Gerrard's Villa will be very, very tight, make it pretty brutal, and that's what Chelsea have struggled with. They've struggled with games where nothing happens and very little happens against Wolves.
Yeah, you know, for a fact, two things were certain, that Villa are going to give them a hard game and Gerrard's going to be head-to-toe in cricket gear. yeah, I think I've got to be honest with you, Neil, I can't sympathise with Chelsea. I'm really enjoying watching them kind of slowly fall apart and the kind of nuts and the bolts falling apart. I think they're very sort of systematic. If you take a couple of those people out, they start looking a lot more average than they do. And I was really, really worried a month ago about Chelsea. I thought they were looking good, as good as City, if not better at times, with the wing-back scoring all sorts of goals and whatnot, even without Lukaku. But at this moment of time, they look like the N'Golo Kante thing, that of course they're missing him. Who wouldn't? He's kind of dream midfielder in this day and age, isn't he? But yeah, hopefully Stevie does us a favour. It's as simple as that.
Stevie does us a favour. It's not even at this point, Harrison, it wouldn't even feel like that much of a favour, because we all know where the priority is. It's looking the other way. It's not looking at Chelsea. But that game against Wolves had the last shot, their last shot on 43 minutes. Wolves' expected goals was 0.3, Chelsea's was 0.83. One of those chances was a big chance that Pulisic had. It feels like Chelsea are built in this way, where we'll get one big chance and we take it and we win the game.
Yeah, it does feel like that. You look at the goal scorers as well, and like even like last night, Jorginho scoring and was in his own goal, the other one, something like that. I just don't know how sustainable it is, and I can't wait for this game. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game. R5 at Villa, it's not easy for anybody. I think what's going to be an interesting battle is going to be Cash and Alonso down that right there, Chelsea's left side. I was watching Norwich v Villa, And look, Villa, you're always back Villa to go and beat them away, but it was just ridiculous how much control they had. Norwich caused United issues. United was nowhere near as in control as Villa was at that game, and I'd love the battle between Cash and Brandon Williams, you know, both committed players, both going in for each other up and down, and I think that's what's going to be similar to Alonso versus Matty Cash. I think Douglas Luiz is another one that Gerrard's getting the best out of now. I think he's gone up a level under Gerrard, and Ollie Watkins is always going to be Ollie Watkins, isn't he? He's always going to be a threat. He's similar to Antonio in a way, but in a different way. Mm. The fact that he's more in behind, but he's relentless with it.
Leads the line, doesn't he? Leads it very well. Yeah,
he's going to give any back line problems, and I think it's going to be interesting if Buendia, I think he's very keen to play Buendia, but he's trying to fit him in. I don't think he's going to be as defensive at home, half five kickoff, you know, Boxing Day, than he was at Anfield. So I think I back them to go and do them.
The thing that surprised me most just on Chelsea again is the goals thing. I think all season, I mean, at the start of the season when people talked about, you know, season previews and where people are going to finish, and a lot of people back Chelsea, I was one of them. I thought he'd be doing better than this, because I just thought, you know, they look good on the back end of last season, and I know all the concerns where, well, you know, they've never strung a run like Liverpool and City together where you have to win 11, 12, 13 on the bounce. But I thought they had goals all over the place, and for whatever reason, whether it is the system that stops them from doing it, you know, they just haven't. I know Lukaku's had his injury problems, but I think they're in danger of getting to a place where, even if it does click, they're falling too far behind, you know. I wouldn't want to be them, for example. You know, I think we're in touching distance of City. They're six behind. If we were 6 points behind City, that's a 2-3 game swing, you know, and they've got to go to City as well. We go there on the second. I don't think, you know, I think they're a good side, and I think he's a good enough manager to work it out at some point. I just think if their ambitions are, you know, winning a league title, they need to get their act together soon. I wouldn't want to be going to Villa on Boxing Day on R5 and having to get a result, knowing that Liverpool are just around the corner. And when City don't look like they're stopping winning, I think they're in trouble of it.
So, well, they're gonna kick off nine behind City.
Yeah. Mm. The worry for them as well is, if, you know, we spoke about, you know, mini leagues within the Premier League. If Liverpool and City pull away, there's no one behind them and in such a distance of them, so they're not looking over the shoulder, and they're not looking above them because it's too far. So where does that leave them? You know, you're playing games, sort of.
It leaves them even more likely to win the Champions League, I think.
Possibly, but, you know, it's a while until that sort of really gets going, doesn't it? And then what are you doing in the league? And then if you're struggling in the league because you've got nothing to play for in that, you don't want to be going into Champions League quarterfinals in bad form, do you? So I think it leaves them in this weird position where, you know, they might struggle. I think it'd be a massive win for them because, you know, I've said on this show before, I know Gerrard and Villa got stick of the way they came to Anfield. I was really impressed with them. I thought they'd be great, and I wouldn't want to go to Villa Park anytime soon. So, like I said, half hour Boxing Day when they're struggling, it's not ideal.
I think there's something to be said about stopping Rudiger. I think if you stop Rudiger progressing with the ball like he does, I think you can stop Chelsea massively.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that they need to sort out. I think a lot of teams are clicking onto it, stopping that left-hand side at Rudiger progressing with him. I think that's something that Villa can exploit. If Rudiger does go, you can see Watkins just floating behind where the space that he's left, and Villa will be in behind. And I just think that it's going to be counter-attack central for Villa. And I just don't think that. I think if Villa score first, I think Chelsea could be in massive trouble.
I think in general, I think it is interesting. I think the idea of, you know, having that, a bit of that gap is a tough one from a Chelsea point of view. The other thing is, I felt for a while, the thing that sort of crept onto me about Chelsea is, for this City side, they're desperate to set the bar. This Liverpool side probably feels it's got two seasons, maybe three, of win now, presuming everyone stays together. So this, you know, these are all your key chances. The Chelsea team's really weird for me in that there's not that many players who are in a genuine sort of win now position. There's a couple who are obviously past the peak, who want to do well, don't get me wrong, but they're not absolutely roaring into games in the best form of the career, like Azpilicueta, Thiago Silva. Kante is an example of that. He's not quite what he was as a force a couple of seasons back, four seasons back. And then the flip side is, you've got lads who are able to look at it and think, oh well, I've got 10 goes at this. And there's just a, you know, like, we're desperate. Last night was an example of us being desperate in a really weird way. And then, you know, every now and again, Wolves away, Liverpool are desperate. You know, it emanates across the whole squad. We're desperate to win this game. Chelsea did not play at Wolves like a side who were desperate to win. And I think that this is a slight difference, which I think they haven't quite addressed yet.
Do you not think, though, the manager sort of has to win now? Because at Chelsea, you're only a couple of months away from...
I think the way he's been, and I think it's helped him at first, is he's like, well, I'll just do this and we'll see what happens. Like, this is almost like it's a job, like, I've got this job for 18 months and we'll see what happens. It's just my job, isn't it, for a bit? And I think that really helped them last season. last season, it took the pressure off the backs a little bit. Like for Lampard, it was live or die.
Yeah.
In a sense, it was his one go at this, and he was fucking it up.
Yeah,
I look at this fella, I think he just feels a bit like, well, if this one doesn't work, I'll get another. I'll be Bayern Munich manager in 3 years. I'll be, you know, I'll get a big job in Italy. I could get Real or Barca. I could get Liverpool at some. You know,
and he's won the Champions League.
And he's won the Champions League. Yeah. I think it's funny. If you look at the core age Chelsea players. I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it strikes me that the lads who were 27, 28, 29, you know, Saul is 27, Kepa's 27, Emerson's 27, I don't know if you know if he's still at the club, Barkley's 28, Kovacic is 28, Kovacic has played well, I've missed him actually, in the absence, Rudiger's 29, Ziyech's 29, I just sort of feel like the lads were the ones who should be absolutely grabbing everyone by the scruff of the neck and screaming at them. Because we need to sort this out. You know, Christensen's 26. He doesn't quite seem like that personality. Loftus-Cheek's 26, but his career's weird.
I think the whole culture of the club comes into this as well. I think the players that you're talking about there, you know, your Kovacic, Rudiger's, they've been here for a few seasons now. Not only have they seen managers come and go, they've seen, you know, the teammates come and go. I think they know if you do reasonably well at a club like Chelsea, you're not far away from a move. And you've seen that with Rudiger already this season with the contract talk, and it doesn't look like he's going to. Yeah. Doesn't look like he's going to sign, and it looks like he's off to Real Madrid, and I think...
Really? Didn't know that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently they've offered him quite a lot of money, but it looks like it's Real Madrid that he'll be off to, and I think it's just a weird club. You know, you talk about us and how, you know, how we get with players, and it feels like sort of, you know, a final destination, and no matter the fact that, you know, you think winning the Champions League would tie you to a club, but if your best centre-half and someone who feels like a big character in the dressing room, like a Rudiger's already looking like he's off in the summer regardless of what happens, I don't know what message that sends out. And
it is all strange.
It is very weird, but I think there is an explanation for it, and it's how they've ran the club for the last 15 years, and you can't argue with it because they've won everything and they win something every year. But I think, you know, if you want an amazing Liverpool-esque season where you take down the mighty Man City in a 90-plus point title race, I think this is where you fall short, because you need to buy into a big thing, and you need to, you know, we've seen it ourselves, you know, you don't get moments like Origi away at Newcastle back end of 18-19 and just falling short and then going again the year after if you're thinking some of these lads won't be here, or the manager's got 6 to 12 months left in him before he goes somewhere else. I just don't think you get that. It needs to be. And they might say, well, that's fine, because if you don't win something this year, some new fellow will come in and we'll win the FA Cup next year and we'll have a go the league the year after. And again, you can't fault them, they've won everything. But I just think in this season of seasons, which now I do think is looking like a 90 plus point season, I think that's where they fall short, because is there that hunger to go every single time, every single week when you are chasing?
Okay, last one is Brighton versus Brentford. John spoke to Alan Wares earlier on from Albion Roar. Always good to speak to him, and here he is.
And it is John with Alan Wares now from Albion Roar. And Alan, it's a big game on Boxing Day. Well, it feels like a big game to me. Two teams on exactly the same number of points. How are you feeling going into it?
Slightly relieved on the fact that I've actually travelled up for Christmas to my in-laws in the north, because it's probably easier to get to Grimsby from Worthing than it would be to get to the Amex from Worthing. Boxing Day. It's fantastic. I mean, I've kind of half followed Brentford since we got promotion. I mean, you have to remember that the two chairmen are kind of rivals in business, but they've actually gone a very similar way in promoting their club. They obviously they've had to invest heavily. A cynic might argue that they've thrown money at it, but then that's the nature of getting from sort of, I suppose, being a former, there's a difference between being a former Premier League side that can rebound as opposed to a side that's made its way up over the years.
Mm.
And there is a similar parallel with Brentford. They've also built their new stadium. So they're doing things the right way. I mean, we'd like to think the Brighton are doing things the right way, certainly off the pitch, and I think Brentford are following suit. So they're kind of an interesting club. We went there earlier in the season. It's a nice stadium. It's a good place to go. A bit of a rarity. We got a win there. But as for the game itself, it's kind of interesting that when Brighton and Brentford are actually considered on the same par, when I suppose probably at the beginning of the season, the average lazy Joe would have said, well, Brentford are going to be relegation fodder. But as you can see, they've clearly done brilliantly. And as for being on the same number of points, now, obviously, we started the season brilliantly, but our direction of travel isn't actually brilliant at the moment. So it's a game that, you know, I suppose with probably any game, we'd have a nervous anticipation about. We played Wolves last week, and we always beat Wolves. Our record against them is superb in comparison to theirs against ours. So this is a game where, you know, nothing is to be taken for granted just because you think, oh, great, Brentford, the new boys at home.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing you talk about the sort of the comparisons between the two clubs, you know, both in terms of how they've been run over the last few years and how the seasons have gone. Because, you know, Brentford, when I speak to Brentford fans, you know, they're still very positive. You know, they're enjoying it. It's going much better than they thought, I think, or you know, I wouldn't say better than they dreamt, but certainly sort of better than, you know, than they were expected, as you quite rightly say, Alan, you know, written off sort of outside there. But in terms of Brighton, because you did start so well, and you know, it's been so long without a win now in the league, I guess, you know, there might be two teams with 20 points, but with different feelings amongst the fan base at the moment in terms of how things are going.
Well, that's what I mean about the direction of travel. Like I said, we started off, our first dozen points were all got by September. Since then, you know, we haven't won in, I think it's 10 or 11, I lose track now, of which about 8 are draws. So we're keeping the scoreboard ticking over. But it really doesn't help when, you know, there's games that, you know, we could have won that we've drawn. You know, I'll even go so far as to say, you know, we could have actually sneaked to win at Anfield.
Yeah.
You know, for those, I know there was a lot of Liverpool fans saying, oh, you know, we're terrible that second half. Although I wasn't there was a lot of Brighton fans saying, oh, how good we were, which was fantastic. And you think, well, great. If you can do that against Liverpool, why can't you do it against other teams as well? And of course, you know, the game against Wolves was abject misery. Again, you know, how many times have I mentioned this, you know, let alone on the Albion Raw, but on the Anfield Wrap as well, about our finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a kind of a same old, same old. And the fans are screaming at the club to buy a striker, which I'm not 100% is convinced is the answer. Yes, we need a better striker, but we, you know, the strikers that we have are good enough. They just don't prove it. So, you know, it's the concern that we have that, you know, we've been here before. You know, it's frustrating. We've had injuries, and I think that actually we've lucked out a little bit with, it sounds an awfully cynical thing to say, that with COVID, you know, the new strain coming our way, it's actually done us a little bit of a favour because we've had so many players out. Now, you shouldn't really sort of guard and set your season along those lines, but it hopefully has done us a wee bit of a favour. But even so, going into the game, we've got a few players returning. We'd have a little bit more hope. However, I think we still do well for a draw because Brentford are not there to be underestimated. And a lot of clubs, when they come up from the Championship, certainly for the first time, into the Premier League, they get underestimated. I remember Hull City, this happened. Barnsley has happened to a certain extent. Bournemouth, it happened. And Brentford, seriously underestimated, think they're for the taking. I mean, you still have to have the mindset that no matter who you've got in front of you, you've got to beat. And Arsenal found that to their cost. So, you know, this is a side that we're not going to take for granted, not for a second.
Yeah, no, it's completely fair. In terms of players coming back then for Brighton, obviously you guys have been hit with a couple of COVID issues similar to sort of other clubs. Obviously there's a few injuries as well. Might there be some back for Boxing Day, especially when it looks like the rules have been changed slightly?
I think certainly we've got Shane Duffy back from suspension, and I think there might be one or two players that are back. I did read, I think Welbeck will be available, and I think I read that Lallana will be available. So that's really going to strengthen things, especially up top. Now, like I said, we played Wolves with what we felt was like a scratch team. And for those that watched the game, those that stayed awake during that game, got to realise that we weren't actually that bad. We controlled the midfield and you know, still couldn't score. So there's an argument to say it doesn't matter who we put out there, we're still going to sky every shot. So, you know, it's but the likes of Welbeck, I think, just add a sense of professionalism and calm and intelligent running in a way that I've got to admit certain forwards at the Albion don't do at the moment. So it would be, I think, of all the boosters that we're going to get back from of players from injury, I think Danny Welbeck is the one I've most looked forward to.
Yeah, one to watch. Huge thanks here to Alan for joining us, as I say, from Albion Raw. And we'll see how that game goes. It's 8 o'clock on Boxing Day night, so I'll certainly be watching it, seeing how it's going. Alan, top man, thanks for joining us.
All the best. Happy Christmas to you.
Great stuff from John and Alan. Just quick on this one, really, because it's, again, it's a bit of a funny game where it's not... it doesn't feel quite as again as crucial to either side. But I think this is part of what's done Brighton in a little bit over the course of the campaign. They're so long now, Jake, since they've won a game, Brighton and Hove Albion, they find themselves, I think, just in danger of a season that could have been a belter. And let's be clear, they've only lost four league games. You know, they've only lost one in four of the league games so far this season. There's been years that have been far worse, and obviously they've had a couple of postponements recently, like everybody else as well. But it's so long now since they've won a league game. A lot of draws in there. They've got to start turning that round soon. Saturday night seems like a really good opportunity for them. Brentford have had a midweek game. Brighton haven't. This is one which does feel as though they need to show that they're absolutely desperate for it, and maybe they'll get it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I know Gibbo's just spoke to somebody from the Brighton clan there, but I feel like you could do me on Brighton, to be honest with you, because I absolutely love watching them. I think they're great, and it is surprising that they're down there, especially because I feel like they've come on a lot since last season. Without having like the stats in front of me, it just feels like the goals have dried up a little bit. But yeah, I really, really rate them. And also, I'm into the Brentford story as well. I'm a football romantic, so I'm not going to apologise for that. And I've just seen that it's on Sky on my phone, so I'm going to set up a WhatsApp group as soon as I get away from here. Because it could be the last time that we're out for a while watching the match, and that sounds great to me.
It could be a really good game, because what Brentford have done well all the way through the season, Harrison, is they've managed to play like, well, we've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And they've really grabbed that mentality, and I think it's served them well. It was a crazy game against Watford that they eventually won. It was tumultuous as anything. They weren't actually very good first half, but they found themselves and they bit down and they battled. And
it was
just
typical Brentford, really.
But they just kept putting the ball in dangerous areas, and I think that's what Brighton have got to worry about here, that it's not so much this side. I think Brentford are brilliant at getting the ball into dangerous areas and seeing what happens next. I think Brighton are really good at pulling you apart and working you and making areas dangerous, and it is going to be quite a clash of styles.
Well, it is, I think. Was it Brighton v Wolves? Brighton had, I don't know what the situation is now, but they had loads of the defensive players out and they were small. And I had a feeling that if Wolves were going to win, it was going to be a centre-half of a set-piece scoring. Do you know what I mean? And that's what came out. Like, you just felt that physically they were going to get bullied eventually. And this is going to be a good game. It's going to be a battle of styles, isn't it? Between playing and then the ball just being like... I think Brentford, like you said, putting it in areas, it's very going to be transitional. Yeah. Like, the minute Brighton lose the ball, Brentford are going to look and get it into that area. And it is well balanced. I think there's going to be goals in my opinion. I think there is. I know Brighton struggle for goals, but I just think that I watched Watford v Brentford, and Watford had a good fair few chances, and it was a very good game, to be fair. And so Brentford score late on and win it. But I said again, I was looking, I think we spoke about it before, I think Brighton, they do need a goal score. I think Divock Origi could go in and do a job for them. Do you know what I mean? Just someone who just stays around the edge of the box, waits for a chance. Minute in the box, goal. Jeremy, just someone.
A
like
job
that.
As his agent, there, mate.
I mean, I'm looking at this now. Have Brighton not won since September? Is that right?
Not once in September.
So I'm looking at the results now, and I'm honestly, I keep scrolling down my phone to check. I haven't missed.
No, they have once in September now.
And that was before they played us. They beat Leicester in September, and Leicester had two disallowed goals. Because I remember watching that. That's mad.
Yeah.
And I know they've had all the madness that went on when they got booed at the end of the game, when they drew at home and he came out and had a bit of a go potter, didn't he? Which is fair enough. Like, but do we know what the Brighton fans said? Are they rubbish now or something?
No. They know that they're still obviously a good side. They're working through this problem. They're just not. I mean, they had a bit of this last season, but what's been really weird this season, the results are grouped, because they won a lot of games before September. They won four. So they won since September. They won four by mid-September. That's why they were sitting up in sort of fourth and fifth. But since then, it's just ebbing away. But it's very few defeats, as I keep saying. There's only four defeats over the course of the campaign. So yeah, it's one of these where it's hard to be a supporter, I think, because you're like, well, we can see what's good. We can see what's less good. We don't quite know what changes one to the other, but we're watching good football. And when, like you said, it's almost an inversion thing of the thing with Palace. Palace are enjoying it. Brighton aren't going to go down, but simultaneously, I think they could probably do with finding ways to enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah, and I think as well, I just feel like we do have this conversation, you know, every year where it's the goals thing. And I know they start, and Morpay started with a few goals and things, but once the goals have dried up, it is that same problem. If you know, I mean, everyone called them the XG team last season, didn't they? Because they were creating loads of chances but not scoring goals. But you know, that isn't fun for a supporter. You know, you talk about them having a better time. You know, we've had seasons at Liverpool, I think about, you know, 2011, 2012, where we kept it in the post bar. That it's just frustrating, isn't it? You know, I'm you're not condoning them, booing them off at that draw a few couple of months ago. But it is annoying when, you know, you're seeing the same thing happen all the time.
Well, they're underperforming expected goals from open play by 5.4 again. So far this season, the expected goals is 16. Number of actual goals from open play is 11.
Yeah.
So there's a point where you're just like, lads, just fucking start kicking it in goal. Like,
And that is frustrating, and that would wind you up.
Yeah.
And it, you know, to a supporter in the crowd, it seems the easiest thing to do. It's the hardest thing to do in football is to score goals. But when it is the same problem year in, year out, I can imagine why they do get frustrated. I like them as a side. You know, like you said, they are in that sort of nice middle of the table, like Palace, where, you know, they're picking up points as well. If they're not losing many games, they're drawing, aren't they? And that'll do them all right. I like Brentford. I couldn't pick a winner in this one, to be honest. I think it might be another draw for Brighton. Hopefully a score.
Just on the XG thing, just to use these two sides as comparison, something I always look at is quality of chance. So far this season, Brighton have had 27 attempts that are better than 0.2 expected goals. So Brentford are on 27, 0.2 expected goals or better. And Brighton are on 18. And that's one of the things that I think gets missed out on, in that, you know, you can be having shots from fuck knows where, and you know, it can work for you sometimes.
Yeah.
But that there is basically, players are just more likely to score more straightforward chances over a period of time. It's, you know, certainly if you've got good players, they're going to stick at the back of the net. If you can put up a bit more of a plate for them, Salah's a great example of that.
Yeah, so we just boxed it, haven't we? So basically, Brighton have got to sign Ivan Toney. It's what you're saying.
It's chance creation is what it is. Yeah. It's not necessarily taking them, although they're not doing that either. Listen, thank you very much indeed to Jake, to Harrison, and to Paddy. Also, John, for doing the two calls. We also had in there Alan and Chris. It has been your Friday show this week. Have a great Christmas. Enjoy all the Boxing Day games. We're not going to do the Monday night one. That's a whole separate universe, and no one even knows if it'll happen or not. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.